The following audio drama is rated PG for parental guidance. You should experience lots of explosions with no body parts. Parents should be ready to cover their ears.
They don't appear to be
This is a Milken Seed Audio production, where entertainment is always free.
Time for the Broken Sea Audio Production OTR Swagcast.
Welcome back to the Swagcast. This is John Bell of Bells in the Bat-Free, thebatfree.com. Sitting in for our usual host, Bill, this evening.
Bill who?
And tonight we feature a classic anthology show from Hollywood. The Lux Radio Theater. Oh man, and do we have some classic shows. Put simply, the Lux Radio Theater dramatized movies for radio, and it strove to feature as many of the original stars of the corresponding film productions as possible, usually paying them $5,000 an appearance to do the show.
Nice work if you can get it.
Lux was power on a scale that even movie people found intimidating. This was not a show to be indulged when shooting schedules permitted. When the Lux Radio Theater called,
ring, ring.
Shooting schedules were abandoned.
Abandoned set!
Entire movie companies stood idle while stars rushed off for radio rehearsals because producers knew when a film was dramatized by Lux, it automatically translated into big box office returns.
Lux for big bucks!
The Lux Radio Theater was broadcast from the Music Box Theater on Hollywood Boulevard, and it was filled to capacity 1,000 seats for each broadcast. At least 50 people were required for each broadcast. Louis Silver's orchestra alone numbered 25.
When they were all sober.
And there were often 20 or more speaking parts. And when technicians were added, the crew overflowed the stage. Each play was a five-day commitment, with the first rehearsals, a table reading of the script.
That table reads good.
On Thursday, followed by the integration of orchestra and sound effects
nine,
and further rehearsals over
twang.
The next 4 days, up to the eventual live broadcast at 9 p.m. on Monday evening.
On the air.
The first Hollywood show was the initial outing for Cecil B. DeMille. I'm ready for my close-up, CB. Hired at $2,000 per week to host the series.
Getting paid for just talking? Ooh.
DeMille had been associated with many big movie productions like The Ten Commandments.
Thou shalt have no other directors before me.
And his opening refrain, greetings from Hollywood, ladies and gentlemen, set the scene for something special.
Is that your Jimmy Stewart?
So tonight on the Swagcast, we feature two films made for radio set during World War II. And let me tell you, the intrigue abounds.
Wah, wah, wah.
First up, Casablanca, starring Alan Ladd as Rick. And I can't imitate Alan Ladd, so I'm going to imitate you-know-who. Sometimes the nominal star just wasn't available. For instance, Alan Ladd replacing Humphrey Bogart in Casablanca, owing to Bogart's overseas duties entertaining U.S. soldiers. And Ladd mentions this fact at the end of the program. In World War II, Casablanca, Rick Blaine, exiled American and former freedom fighter, runs the most popular night spot in town. The cynical lone wolf Blaine comes into possession of two valuable letters of transit when Nazi Major Strasser arrives in Casablanca.
Is that Eugene Cagney?
The syncopatic police Captain Renault does what he can to please him, including detaining Czech underground leader Victor Laszlo.
He bounced the Czech.
Much to Rick's surprise, Laszlo arrives with Ilsa, Rick's one-time love. Rick is very bitter towards Ilsa, who ran out on him in Paris, which we'll always have. But when he learns she had good reasons to, they planned to run off together using the letters of transit. Well, that was their original plan.
Time goes by. Bye.
Also tonight from Lux, James Mason stars in the radio version of his film Five Fingers, which was nominated for 2 Oscars in 1952.
They were kept in Mason jars.
Mason stars alongside his wife in this World War II thriller.
Sit up, James. Speak the truth.
During World War II, the valet to the English ambassador to Ankara sells British secrets to the Germans while trying to romance a refugee Polish countess.
Nice work if you can get it.
Based on a true story, in neutral Turkey during World War II,
gobble, I'm neutral.
The ambitious and extremely efficient valet for the British ambassador tires of being a servant and forms a plan to promote himself to rich gentlemen of leisure. His employer has many secret documents. He will photograph them, and with the help of a refugee countess, sells them to the Nazis.
Whoa.
Then he makes a certain amount of money. He will retire to South America with the countess as his wife, or so he hopes.
Things go awry.
Awry.
Also on tap tonight. The Avengers. Hope you enjoy.
Mrs. P.O., we're needed.
Ooh,
nice jumpsuit.
Lux presents Hollywood. The Lux Radio Theater brings you Hedy Lamarr, Alan Ladd, and John Loder in Casablanca with Edgar Barrier. Ladies and gentlemen, your producer, Mr. Cecil B. DeMille.
Greetings from Hollywood, ladies and gentlemen. One bright January morning, just a year ago, the city of Casablanca in French Morocco woke up and found itself famous. It had entertained many mysterious visitors from a world at war, but never before the President of the United States and the Prime Minister of Great Britain. Within a few days, Warner Brothers had rushed their screen drama, Casablanca, to the theaters of the nation, and people marveled at a Hollywood miracle. Actually, of course, the picture had been planned and filmed during the months previous, because Casablanca had an exciting story to tell even before the President and Prime Minister arrived. It's a story of love and hate and a background of adventure and sudden death. Tonight we bring you that drama with a cast that producers dream about. Hedy Lamarr and Alan Ladd and John Loder. Hedy came back to town last week from Texas with the applause of the soldiers at Camp Hood still ringing in her ears. And so we borrowed her from Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer, where she's just completed the picture, Heavenly Body. Alan Ladd, of course, came to us from Paramount. I'm hoping to have Alan for my next picture, following the story of Dr. Wassel. Getting these players together in one drama is a talent scoop of the first magnitude in Hollywood, and it's unlikely that it would ever happen in a picture, because our stars are under contract at different studios and are kept so busy on their home lots that they aren't loaned out, as the phrase goes. We really should thank Lux Toilet Soap for making this occasion possible. Every bit of work and artistry that has gone into our production, from the first word of the script on paper to the final dress rehearsal, has been designed for your enjoyment. We might call it a bonus that you get when you buy Lux Toilet Soap, above and beyond the bonus of beauty that you expect. And we'll pay that bonus right now, as the curtain rises on the first act of Casablanca, starring Alan Ladd as Rick, Hedy Lamarr as Ilse Lund, and John Loder as Victor Laszlo, with Edgar Barrier as Renault. Everyone knows that name today, Casablanca. Before the war, Casablanca was just another small seaport, with its face to the Mediterranean and its back to the North Atlantic. But then, as the Nazi lash descended upon Europe, hordes of refugees, like the boiling waters of a burst dam, flooded into the sanctuary of its white walls. Those with money enough, or influence enough, obtained exit visas, bearing the seal of the Vichy government, and fled to Lisbon, and from Lisbon to the Americas. The others just waited and waited. But all who came to Casablanca were not refugees. The German intelligence was always there when anything unusual occurred. As, for example, the murder of two Nazi couriers.
Major Strasser, may I present Captain Reynaud, Police Prefect of Casablanca.
Unoccupied France welcomes you, Major.
Thank you.
You may find the climate of Casablanca a trifle warm.
We Germans must get used to all climates, Captain, from Russian to the Sahara. But perhaps you were not referring to the weather.
Oh, what else, my dear Major?
The murder of the couriers. What has been done about it?
Captain Reynaud already knows who the murderer is.
Excellent. He is in custody?
There is no hurry. Tonight, he will come to Rick's.
That cafe, Major, I pointed it out to you.
Everybody in Casablanca comes to Rick's, but this one will not leave.
Frankly, Captain, I did not journey here simply to find an assassin. The real reason for my visit is Victor Laszlo.
I thought as much.
Has he arrived yet?
Yes, this afternoon, with a very beautiful young woman. I met them.
Reynaud, Laszlo must not leave Casablanca. I have learned that he is prepared to offer a fabulous bribe for a visa to Lisbon.
I am prepared to refuse it.
Where is he staying, you know?
Major, I even know the time he intends to bathe.
I would like to talk with Laszlo. Can it be arranged?
Undoubtedly, he too will be at Rick's tonight. Everybody comes to Rick's. Or did I mention that before?
Yes, monsieur?
I reserved a table. Victor Laszlo.
Yes, monsieur Laszlo, just one moment, please.
Victor, are you sure we should have come here, so in public?
There's often the greatest safety in what appears to be a risk.
I see no one here who forgot his description.
Neither do I. He'll be here, though.
Excuse me. I have a ring here.
What?
A ring. I'm forced to sell it at a great sacrifice.
Well, I hardly think that...
Perhaps the lady. The ring is quite unique. You see?
That's it, Victor.
Yes, it's a very interesting ring. What's your name?
Berger, monsieur. I recognized you from the newspaper photographs. We read 5 times that you were killed in 5 different places.
As you see, 5 different places? As you can see, it's true each time. Thank heaven we found you, Berger. I'm looking for a man by the name of Ugarte. He's supposed to help us.
He's here somewhere. You need all the help you can get.
Yes, this time they mean to stop me.
Oh, I'm so afraid for you, Victor.
We've been in difficult places before.
Why? Waiter's coming back.
That's all, Beggar. Meet us at the bar later.
Oh, I don't think we want to buy the ring, but thank you for showing it to us.
Yeah?
It's Franz, Rick. Franz Ugarte.
Come in. What do you want?
Oh, nothing much, Rick. Too bad about those German couriers, eh?
Well, they got a break. Yesterday, they were just 2 clerks. Today, they're among the honored dead.
You will forgive me for saying this, Rick, but you are a very cynical person.
I forgive you.
You despise me, don't you?
Well, if I gave you any thought, I probably would.
But think of the poor refugees who must rot in Casablanca if I did not help them. Is it so bad that through ways of my own I provide them with exit visas?
For a price, Ugarte, for a price.
Oh, those poor wretches who cannot meet Renault's price, I get it for them at half. Is that so parasitic?
Well, I don't mind a parasite. I just object to a cut-rate one.
Well, after tonight, I'm through with the whole business. I'm leaving Casablanca. Rick, look.
What?
Look, Rick, look. Do you know what these papers are? Letters of transit signed by Marshal Vagon. With his signature, they cannot be rescinded or questioned. Not even by Renault.
So?
So, I'm selling these for more money than I ever dreamed of. And then, goodbye.
What are you trying to say, Ugarte?
Rick, I have many friends in Casablanca. But because you despise me, you are the only one I trust. Will you keep these letters for me?
How long?
For an hour, perhaps, till my client arrives.
Okay. But I don't want them here overnight.
Oh, thank you, thank you. No fear of that. Now, Rick, I hope you are more impressed with me. I'll go to share my luck now with your roulette wheel.
Hey, wait a minute.
Yes?
I heard a rumor that those Nazi couriers were carrying letters of transit.
No. Yes. Poor devils. I heard that rumor, too.
You're right, Ugarte. I am a little more impressed with you.
Good evening, Rick.
Well, Hello, Renault.
Hear that plane, Ricky? It's going to Lisbon. You'd like to be on it?
Why, what's in Lisbon?
The Clipper that goes to America. Rick, I have often speculated on why you do not return to America.
There's a roulette table inside for people who like to speculate.
Yes. I noticed Ugarte just went in.
Yes, he'll come out poor.
What was it, Rick? Whatever brought you to Casablanca? Did you abscond with the church funds back home? Did you run off with somebody's wife? I should like to think that you killed a man. It's the romantic in me.
Well, I'll tell you. It was a combination of all three.
Someday I'll find out. Oh, Rick, before you came, I took the liberty of escorting a visitor to your best table, a German, Major Strasser. I wanted him to be on hand for the excitement, because tonight we're making an arrest here.
Again?
This time a murderer. Please don't warn him, Rick.
Now, look, I stick my neck out for nobody.
And I'm staging the arrest here out of my high regard for you. It'll interest the customers.
And perhaps Major Strasser.
Perhaps. Cassell.
Yes, Captain.
You will find Franz Ugarte inside at the roulette table.
Yes.
Arrest him for the murder of the German couriers.
Yes, Captain.
Or he'll be carrying some letters of transit. Be sure you get them.
Yes.
Louis, there's more than Ugarte on your mind tonight.
Oh, you're very observant, Rick. There are many exit visas sold in this cafe, but we know that you have never sold them. That is why I permit you to remain open.
No, I thought it was because I let you win at roulette.
Oh, that's another reason. Rick, a man arrived today in Casablanca on his way to America. Right now he's at the bar. He will offer a fortune to anyone who will furnish him with an exit visa.
What man?
Victor Laszlo. Why, Ricky, this is the first time I've ever seen you so interested.
Laszlo has succeeded in interesting half the world. I wonder how he'll manage it.
Manage what?
His escape.
He escaped from a concentration camp, and the Nazis have chased him all over Europe. But this is the end of the chase, Rick.
10,000 francs says it isn't.
Make it 5,000. I'm only a poor, corrupt official. No, no matter how clever he is, he still needs an exit visa. I should say two. He's traveling with a lady.
He'll settle for one.
Oh, I think not. I have seen the lady.
Now, where did you get the idea that I might help Laszlo?
Because I know all about you, Ricky. Enough at least to know you're more a sentimentalist than a cynic. I know that in 1935 you ran guns into Ethiopia. I know that in 1936 you risked your neck with the loyalists in Spain.
And got well paid on both occasions?
The winning side would have paid you much better.
Maybe. Louis, why do you want to keep Laszlo here? Gestapo spank?
You overestimate the influence of the Gestapo. In Casablanca, I'm the boss. I do not interfere with them, nor they. Cassell is a very noisy policeman. Mr. Laszlo, Mademoiselle Lund, welcome to Rix.
You welcomed us this afternoon at the airport, Captain.
I welcome everyone everywhere. Oh, my profoundest apologies for the recent disturbance, most unfortunate.
Yes, for the poor man who was killed. Horrible.
Horrible, mademoiselle? But then may I ask, why did you remain?
Oh, permit me, Major Strasser, Mademoiselle Lund, Monsieur Laszlo.
We've heard of you, Major.
The Major asked, why did you remain after the regrettable shooting?
We were here to meet someone. He's not yet arrived. Ilza, I think perhaps we should leave now.
It might be wiser, monsieur. I do not think your friend will come. He just removed the body of Franz Ugarte to the morgue.
Franz Ugarte?
Your friend.
I'm sorry, Captain, but the name Franz Ugarte means absolutely nothing to me.
Oh, come now, monsieur. We know that
This is enough for tonight. Tomorrow at 10, Monsieur Laszlo, in the captain's office. With mademoiselle.
We are not under your authority, Major. This is French soil. Captain Renault, is it your order that we come to your office?
Let us say it is my request.
Very well.
At 10 o'clock in the morning. Good night.
Sleep well, Major. Now, my friends, after all this unpleasantness, a little relaxation. Sit down, please. Waiter.
Yes, Captain.
A bottle of the best champagne. Put it on my bill.
Oh, now, please.
Oh, they put it on my bill. I tear the bill up. It's just a little game we play.
We shouldn't stay. We seem to be the only ones left.
I'm afraid Ricky will be very cross with me. killing one customer and driving the others away. Oh, but that's no reason why you shouldn't be entertained. Sam.
Evening, Captain.
Sing something nice for my guest, Sam.
Sure, boss.
Mademoiselle, I had been informed you were the most beautiful woman ever to visit Casablanca. That is a gross understatement.
Thank you. You're very kind. Captain, that man's singing.
He's been staring at you for the past 5 minutes, Ilza.
I've seen him before somewhere.
Oh, Sam? Oh, he came here from Paris with Rick.
Rick? Who is he?
Mademoiselle, you are in Rick's. And Rick is, well...
Is what?
Well, he is the kind of a man that... Well, if I were a woman and I were not around, I would be in love with Rick. No offense, monsieur.
If you both won't think me terribly rude, will you excuse me a moment? I want to talk to Sam.
To Sam? Of course, my dear.
Hurry back, mademoiselle.
With all your faults, I love you still.
Hello, Sam.
Hello, Miss Ilsa. Never expected to see you again.
Been a long time.
Yes, miss.
Where is he, Sam?
Why, who, miss?
Rick.
I don't know. I ain't seen him all night.
Will he be back?
Not tonight no more. He ain't coming. He went home.
Does he always leave so early after a shooting? Oh, Sam, you used to be a much better liar.
Leave him alone, Miss Ilsa. You're bad luck to him.
Sam, play it once, for old time's sake.
I don't know what you mean.
Play it, Sam, as time goes by.
I can't remember it, Miss Ilsa.
Please. Sing it, Sam.
Oh, Miss Ilsa. You must remember this. A kiss is still a kiss. A sigh is just a sigh. The fundamental things apply as time goes by. And when two lovers woo, they still say...
Sam! I thought I told you never to play that.
Now you've done it.
Well, Rick, come here. I want you to meet some charming people.
Well, hello, Elsa.
Hello, Rick.
Oh, you two know each other. Well, then you also know Monsieur Victor Laszlo?
No.
Oh.
One hears a great deal about Rick in Casablanca.
And about you everywhere.
Won't you join us for a drink? This is the most interesting cafe, even without the gunplay. I congratulate you.
And I congratulate you.
What for?
For your work.
Thank you. I try.
We all try. You succeed.
Well, I can't get over you two knowing each other.
I wasn't sure you were the same. Let's see. The last time we met, wasn't it in Paris?
Well, that shouldn't be too hard to remember. It was the day the Germans marched in. The Germans wore gray. You wore blue.
Ilza, I don't wish to be the one to say it, but it is late.
Yes, so it is. Carl, the bill.
Forget it, Carl. It's my party.
Oh, it is. We're all in all a most unusual evening.
We'll come again.
Do that.
Will you say goodnight to Sam for me?
Sure.
There's still nobody in the world who can sing as time goes by like Sam.
He hasn't done it in a long time. Good night.
Oh, I'd like just one word with Rick, Monsieur Laszlo, and then if you wish, I'd be delighted to drive you to your hotel.
Thank you. We'll wait outside. A very puzzling fellow, this Rick. Just what sort is he?
I really can't say. I met him in Paris. We were once acquaintances.
In just a few minutes, Mr. DeMille presents Hedy Lamarr, Alan Ladd, and John Loder in Act Two of Casablanca. And now, here are two young workers in a busy office getting ready to leave for the day.
Sue, if you look in that mirror any harder, you'll break it. Why the anxious expression? Oh, no letter from Jim today?
Yes, Jim wrote, and he may get a furlough next month. Say, Peggy.
Yes, Sue?
You know, everyone used to say what a swell complexion I had. Guess it was my best feature. But lately, it doesn't look like anything.
Lost the old sparkle, eh? And now you're worrying because Jim's coming home. You've been working all hours lately. Been neglecting your beauty care, I'll bet.
Well, It is easier not to bother sometimes, I'll admit.
Yes, and it's practically fatal to take that attitude about your looks. Listen to your Aunt Peggy, Susie. She's going to prescribe for you. Every day, without fail, an active lather facial.
Active lather facial?
With Lux toilet soap, the soap screen stars use. And believe me, it works. I know, because Lux soap care helped my skin to look lots nicer. Now, here's what you do.
And this is the Lux soap beauty facial Peggy told her friend to take.
Cover your face generously with that nice, creamy lather. Work it in gently, but thoroughly, too. Now, rinse with warm water, splash with cold, and dry with a soft towel. Easy, isn't it? Just try that every single day from now on.
And only a few weeks later, Sue said...
Oh, Peggy, I owe you and Lux Soap a world of thanks. What a thrill it was to have Jim tell me.
Sue, darling, you look lovely. Prettier than ever. Many a girl has found daily Lux Toilet Soap facials really make skin lovelier. Recent tests show that actually 3 out of 4 complexions improved with this care. Grew softer, smoother. Why not let this fine white soap give your skin protecting care it should toilet soap tomorrow? And if you find your dealer is temporarily out of stock due to wartime conditions, he's sure to have more soon. Remember, Lux Toilet Soap, Hollywood's beauty soap, is worth waiting for. And now, Mr. DeMille returns to the microphone.
Act 2 of Casablanca, starring Alan Ladd as Rick, Hedy Lamarr as Ilse, and John Loder as Victor, with Edgar Barrier as Renault. It's hours later, and in Rick's cafe, a solitary lamp still burns. Rick sits at a table staring into an empty highball glass, and in the shadows, Sam fingers the keyboard quietly.
Bowles, ain't you going to bed?
Mm-mm. Not right now.
Well, ain't you planning on going to bed in the near future?
No. Go on, keep playing, will you?
Okay. Boss, let's get out of here. There ain't nothing but trouble for you here.
She's coming back. I know she's coming back.
Well, we could take the car, you and me, and drive till morning. We go fishing somewhere and stay until she leaves.
Ugade dies and she walks in. One out, one in. Of all the joints and all the towns and all the world, she walks in a mine. Hey, what's that your plan?
Oh, just a little something of my own.
Now, stop it. You know what I want to hear?
No, I don't.
Now, you played it for her, you can play it for me.
Yes, boss. Boss, listen.
What?
You got company.
And I was counting on it.
Rick. May I talk to you?
So long, boss. Miss Ilse, you shouldn't have come.
Want a drink?
No.
Why did you have to come to Casablanca?
I wouldn't have come if I'd known you were here. Believe me, Rick, it's true.
What about your voice? Still the same. Rick, dear, I'll go any place with you. We'll get on a train together and we'll never stop.
Don't, Rick. Please don't. I understand how you feel.
How long did I know you, honey?
Oh, I didn't count the days.
I did. Every one of them. Mostly I remember the last one. Paris. The wild finish. Guy waiting at a station in the rain with a marriage license in his pocket and a funny look on his kisser because a sledgehammer just hit him between the eyes.
Can I tell you a story, Rick?
There's a go. I'll finish.
I don't know the finish yet myself.
Okay. Maybe one will come to you as you go along.
It's about a girl who met a man she's heard about all her life. A great and courageous man. And soon, everything this girl knew or ever became was because of this man. She looked up to him and worshipped him with a feeling she thought was love.
I've heard better stories in my time. Tell me, was he the guy you left me for? Was it Laszlo? Or were there a few others in between?
Rick.
A lot of people ran away from Paris that day. I wonder if they all left notes. You left a note, didn't you? Sam brought it to me at the railroad station. I guess it was a love light. My eyes had helped him spot me and all that mob.
Yes, I wrote you a note. I know it was cowardly, but I just couldn't face you.
I cannot go with you or ever see you again. Remember? I must not ask why. You just believe that I love you and God bless you. It's a literal translation, Elson.
I thought if I came here tonight and spoke to you, I could make you understand. I'm sorry, Rick.
Don't give up, honey. I'm just a slow study. Call again sometime and give it another whirl.
We have searched Ugarte's apartment again, Major. No luck. Someone else must have them.
And I strongly suspect that someone is Rick. I suggest you continue the search in the cafe.
If Rick has the letters of transit, he is much too smart to let you find them there.
You give him too much credit. Just another blundering American.
We must not underestimate American blundering, Major. I was with them when they blundered into Berlin in 1918.
As to Laszlo, we want him watched. 24 hours a day.
Yes, it's 10 o'clock, Major, and he and the girl are waiting now for us.
Send him in.
Send them in, Cassell. I do not think we're going to get very far with Laszlo this morning.
Nevertheless, there's no loss in making him the obvious offers.
Only a loss of time. Oh, good morning. I'm delighted to see you both.
Laszlo, mademoiselle.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Won't you sit down?
Thank you.
Laszlo, we will not mince words.
Good. Let's begin by saying that I'm an escaped prisoner of the Third Reich, from whom no one ever escapes.
I do not deny you are an exceptional man. Monsieur, you say Third Reich as if you expect there will be others.
I take what comes, Major.
So far, yes. You have been fortunate enough to elude us. You have reached Casablanca. I intend to make certain you stay here.
Whether or not you succeed, Major, is, of course, problematical.
Not quite. On all exit visas issued here in Casablanca, Captain Renault's signature is necessary. Captain, would you think it possible that Laszlo will receive a visa?
And I'm afraid not, Monsieur.
Well, perhaps I'll like it here.
And you, Mademoiselle?
You needn't be concerned about me.
As a matter of fact, you could both be on your way to Lisbon this very night.
But, of course, under certain conditions. Well, Major, what are your terms?
As leader of the underground movement, you know who the other leaders are. In Paris, Athens, Prague, Amsterdam...
And Berlin?
Furnish me their names and exact whereabouts, and you will have your visa immediately.
And the honor of serving the Third Reich.
Major, what if he did give them to you? What if you did track them down and kill them? From every corner of Europe, hundreds, thousands would rise and take our places. Even Nazis can't kill that far.
You make only one mistake. In the event anything unfortunate should occur to Monsieur Laszlo, no one could take his place.
Thank you.
You wouldn't dare interfere with him here. This is still unoccupied France.
Any violation of neutrality will reflect on you, Captain.
Monsieur, so far as it is in my power, that neutrality will be respected.
Are you finished with us?
For the moment, yes.
Then good day. Come, Ilse.
Your next step toward securing a visa is what, Monsieur?
I don't know.
But let me save you some time. Sooner or later, the man to see will be Senor Ferrari, and he operates the Blue Parrot Cafe across the street from your hotel. Good day, Mademoiselle.
Hello, Ferrari. I saw the supply truck come in. I thought I'd stop by for the American cigarettes.
But why yourself? My boy will bring them over.
Every time he does, he orders a little bit short.
Carrying charges, my boy. Carrying charges. I'm glad you're here, Rick. I want to talk to you. The news about Ugarte upset me very much.
Now, look, you don't feel any sorrier for Ugarte than I do.
Of course not. What upsets me is that no one knows where those letters of transit are.
Practically no one.
If I could lay my hands on them, I could make a fortune.
And so could I. And I'm a poor businessman.
I have a proposition for whoever has those letters. I'll handle the entire transaction, get rid of the letters, and take all the risk for a small percentage. That's the proposition I have for whoever has those letters.
Well, I'll tell him when he comes in.
Rick, I think you know where they are.
And Alton Strasser thinks so, too. That's really why I came over here. To give them a good chance to tear my place apart.
Excuse me, senor.
Yes?
There's a man who wishes to see you. Monsieur Laszlo.
I was rather expecting him. Send him in.
Is he alone?
There is a lady also. He said she would wait outside.
But she will not wait alone, hey, Rick?
Well, suppose you just concentrate on Laszlo. Hey, Ferrari?
Send him in, Sasha. The back way. A little courtesy for Rick.
Good morning.
Hello, Rick.
I'm sorry about last night.
Doesn't matter.
The story had me a little confused, or maybe it was the bourbon.
Forget it.
You can repeat it now. I'm reasonably sober.
I don't think I will.
Why not? After all, I got stuck with a railway ticket.
All right. Victor Laszlo is my husband.
Well, what do you know?
And he was, even when I knew you in Paris.
I don't believe it.
There seems to be so much you don't believe.
What about it?
It happened almost a year before I met you. He loved me, and I thought I loved him.
Soon after we were married, he had to leave France.
And this time he has to leave Casablanca.
Yes, he must. Oh, you have so changed, Rick. The Rick I knew in Paris, I could tell him, but not you. I'll be leaving Casablanca soon, and I hope we'll never meet again. If we leave it that way, maybe we'll remember those old days and forget last night.
Well, I'm not leaving Casablanca. I'm settled now. Above a saloon. You walk up one flight of stairs. I'll expect
you. It will take a miracle to get you out of Casablanca, Monsieur Laszlo. And the Germans have outlawed miracles.
I got tired of waiting, Victor. Do you mind?
Sit down, mademoiselle, please. You see, as leader of all illegal activities in Casablanca, I am an influential and respected man. But I am helpless to do anything for Monsieur Laszlo. You, however, are a different matter.
He thinks it might just be possible to get an exit visa for you.
To go alone?
Yes.
We're only interested in two visas, senor.
Please, Ilse, you must get to America. And believe me, somehow, sometime, I'll join you.
What if things were different? What if I had to stay and there was only one visa? Would you take it?
Yes, I would.
Then why didn't you leave me in Lille? When I had trouble getting out of there, or in Marseille, when I was ill, and you were in desperate danger every second. Why didn't you leave me then, Victor?
I meant to. But something always held me up.
I, too, am a very sensitive man, monsieur. I know.
I happen to love her very much.
So, for the present, senor, we'll go on looking for two visas. Thank you.
I am moved to make a suggestion. You are aware of Ugarte and the letters of transit?
Yes, slightly.
I'll venture to guess that Ugarte left those letters in Rick's cafe. He is a difficult customer, but it is worth the chance.
You have been very patient, senor. Good day.
Now, what's all this about?
A near riot in your own cafe. You don't even bother to get up and see for yourself.
I've got other things on my mind. What happened?
Some German officers started to sing the Watch on the Rhine. They wanted the customers to join in.
Well,
they did. Except what they sang sounded more like La Marseillaise. With my usual tact, I handled the situation perfectly. Now, Rick.
Hmm?
My men gave this place a rather thorough going over this morning.
Yeah, we just barely got it cleaned up in time to open.
As I told my men to be especially destructive, you know how that impresses Germans. Where are the letters, Rick?
You see, Captain, the situation is not as much under control as you believe. That song is verboten. How dare they sing it?
Now, my dear Major, we cooperate with your government, but we cannot control the feelings of these refugees.
Captain, are you entirely certain which side you are on?
Oh, I blow with the wind, Major. And right now, the prevailing breeze is from Vichy.
Well, I have been thinking. It is too dangerous for us to let Laszlo leave Casablanca, but it may also be too dangerous to let him stay. We know all of North Africa is honeycombed with traitors just waiting for someone to lead them.
Yes, it poses an intricate problem.
There's one man who could solve it.
Who?
He just walked in. Victor Laszlo. I'm a very bright boy, Laszlo. I figured you came here to see me, and I figured you preferred seeing me in my office, alone.
You do nothing but bewilder me.
But you hope I may also be able to help you.
You told me once you knew of my activities. Then you must know how important it is that I get out of here, to help continue the work of a very great movement.
The problems of the world are beyond me, Laszlo. I'm just a saloon keeper.
My friends in the underground have told me differently. They mentioned Spain and Ethiopia, and a strange tendency of yours to be always with the underdog.
Well, I found it a very expensive hobby. But then I never was much of a businessman.
Are you enough of a businessman to appreciate an offer of 100,000 francs?
I appreciate it, but I don't accept.
200,000?
Make it 1,000,000 francs or 10 francs, the answer is still no.
There must be some reason why you refuse to sell the letters.
There is. I suggest you ask your wife.
I beg your pardon?
I said ask your wife.
Are you leaving, Victor? Where are you going?
Oh, I thought I mentioned it. There's a meeting of the underground.
Oh, please don't go, Victor. I'm frightened. Look. Look out the window.
I don't have to, darling. I'm used to being trailed.
What's going to happen, Victor?
Who knows, Ilse, dear? Strasser now threatens to find some excuse to put me quietly away in jail.
All the more reason why you must stay here tonight.
I'm frightened too, Ilse, but what can I do? Hide in a hotel room or carry on the best I can?
Whatever I'd say, you'd carry on. Victor, why didn't you tell me about Rick? You saw him, didn't you?
Apparently he has the letters.
Yes?
But no intention of selling them. You'd think that if sentiment wouldn't persuade him, that money would.
Did he give you any reason?
He suggested that I ask you.
Ask me?
Ilse, when I was in the concentration camp, were you lonely in Paris?
Yes, Victor, I was.
I know what it is to be lonely. Is there anything you wish to tell me?
No. No, there isn't.
My dear, I love you very much.
Yes, I know. Victor, whatever I do, will you believe me that I...
You don't even have to say it. I'll believe you. Good night, dear.
Good night, Victor. Please be careful.
We pause now for station identification. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System. In a few minutes, Mr. DeMille and our stars Alan Ladd, Hedy Lamarr, and John Loder will return in Act 3 of Casablanca. And now, here's our Hollywood reporter, Libby Collins. Greetings, Libby. What's new?
Well, for one thing, Mr. Kennedy, my hat. What do you think of it?
Your hat, Libby? Why, it's nice. Very nice. Yes, I like it.
Oh, come on now. Stop hedging. What do you really think of it?
To tell the truth, Libby, I hardly noticed the hat. I was looking at you.
Well, Mr. Kennedy, that's a compliment. But just let me turn around. Now look.
Oh, I see. It's really quite a hat. Libby, that must be very new.
It is, but well, how would you know?
Well, it's so sort of simple. Not one of those dizzy numbers that looks as though it might fly off into space any minute.
Mr. Kennedy, you're an observant man. This is the newest thing. The profile cloche. It fits snugly on the head, and it's meant to frame the face, not take attention away from it.
I think I begin to see why you wore that little hat tonight, Libby.
Of course. To show that it's more important than ever for a woman to have nice, smooth skin.
Sure. Because with that kind of headgear, the emphasis is less on the hat than it is on the face underneath it. Well, Libby, I guess many a woman is going to be mighty happy about her Lux Soap complexion care, then.
Yes, this hat seems designed to set off a lovely Lux complexion, and it's going to be a popular style this spring.
Then daily Lux Soap complexion care ought to be more popular than ever, too. Because gentle Lux toilet soap really makes skin softer, smoother. Recent tests showed that Lux Soap Beauty Facials improved actually 3 out of 4 complexions, you know.
Well, Mr. Kennedy, nearly every famous star in Hollywood is devoted to this fine white soap. Screen stars say the creamy Lux Soap lather is wonderfully kind to delicate skin.
And that's why, Libby, I'm going to urge every woman in our audience who hasn't tried Lux Toilet Soap to get some of Hollywood's beauty soap and use it every day. Here's a thrift tip, too. It's patriotic not to waste soap. And because Lux Soap is hard milled, you can use it down to the last thin sliver. It'll last even longer if you always put it in a soap dish that's dry. Moisten the thin leftover piece and press against your new cake of Lux toilet soap. Now, our producer, Mr. DeMille.
We'll report on the offstage doings of our stars after the play. But now here's the curtain for Act 3 of Casablanca, starring Hedy Lamarr, Alan Ladd, and John Loder with Edgar Barrier. For nearly an hour after Victor Laszlo left for the meeting of the underground, Ilsa sat motionless in the drab hotel room. Suddenly, her mind made up, she takes an object out of her husband's briefcase, walks through the dark, quiet night to Rick's cafe and up the outside stairs that lead to the second floor.
I told you this morning you'd come around. But this is a little ahead of schedule.
Rick, I had to see you.
That's what you said last night. All this has nothing to do with the letters of transit, has it? Seems as long as I have those letters, I'll never be lonely.
You can ask any price you want, but you must give them to me.
I went through all that with your husband. It's no deal.
I know how you feel about me, but I'm asking you to put your feelings aside for something more important.
Do I have to hear again what a great man your husband is, what an important cause he's fighting for?
It was your cause, too. In your own way, you fought for the same thing.
Well, I'm not fighting for anything anymore except myself.
Rick, once you loved me, if those days mean anything at all to you...
I would bring up Paris if I were you. It's poor salesmanship.
Listen to me, Rick. If you only knew the truth...
I wouldn't believe you no matter what you told me. You'd say anything now to get what you want.
You want to feel sorry for yourself, don't you? One woman has hurt you and you take your revenge on the rest of the world. Rick. Rick, please help us. If you don't, Victor will die in Casablanca.
Well, I'm going to die in Casablanca, too. It's a good spot for it.
All right. I tried. I tried to reason with you, Rick. Now I want those letters.
A gun, Ilsa? Is that really a gun in your hand?
Where are the letters?
Right here in my pocket.
Put them on the table.
Uh-uh.
For the last time, put them on the table.
All right, go ahead and shoot, Ilsa. You'll be doing me a favor.
I can't. You know I can't. I've done nothing but make a fool of myself. Oh, I don't know what to do, what to say. I thought I would never see you again. The day you left Paris, if you knew what I went through, if you knew how much I loved you, how much I still love you.
All right, I'm crazy. I'm crazy, but I believe you. You win. Ilsa, what happened? What was it? I've imagined everything in the world and none of it very pretty.
I've tried to tell you. A few months after Victor left France, word came that he was in a concentration camp. And then, not long after, another message that he was dead. Shot trying to escape. I had nothing. Not even hope. Then I met you.
Why weren't you honest with me then? Why didn't you tell me you'd been married, that he was dead or something?
Victor wanted it that way. It was his way of protecting me. I knew too much about his work. The Gestapo found out I was his wife. It would be dangerous for me and for those working with us.
When did you find out he was still alive?
Just before you and I were going to leave, his friends came. They were hiding him in a freight car on the outskirts of Paris. He was almost dead. Well... That's it, Rick.
Still a story without an ending. What about now?
Now? I don't know. Except that I'll never have the strength again to run away from you.
And Laszlo?
You'll help him, won't you? You'll see that he gets out. And then he'll live as his work. All that he's been living for.
All except you.
Oh, I can't fight anymore. I don't know anymore what's right and what's wrong. We'll have to think for both of us. For all of us.
Okay. Okay, I will.
If only I didn't love you so.
Oh, Elsa, I... Wait a minute.
What's the matter?
Just heard a door close quiet. Hey, Sam. Is that you?
Yeah, boss.
What's the matter?
And Mr. Laszlo, I found him crawling through our cellar window.
Victor.
Come up here. Does he know you're here?
No. There was a meeting of the underground tonight. They must have been following him. Ono's men, Strasser's men.
So he picks my place to hide, that's fine.
You got some iodine, boss? He cut his hand, breaking the wind in.
Oh.
Hello, Sam.
Evening, Miss Ilsa.
Sam, I want you to take Miss Lund to her hotel.
What about Victor?
He cut his hand, didn't he? I don't like blood on my floor. I'll go down and patch him up. And Sam?
Yeah, boss.
Miss Lund will prefer going out the back stairs.
I'm sorry about this, Rick. I've had a little trouble.
I'll forget it. Well, I guess I'd ought to take care of your hand.
Thanks. If it's all right with you, I'd like to stay here a few minutes longer.
Yeah. Don't you sometimes wonder if it's worth all this, what you're fighting for?
We might as well question why we breathe. If we stop breathing, we'll die. If we stop fighting our enemies, the world will die.
What of it?
You know how you sound, Rick. Like a man who is trying to convince himself of something he doesn't at all believe. Each of us has a destiny, for good or evil.
I get the point.
I wonder if you do. I wonder if you know that you're trying to escape from yourself, and you'll never succeed.
You seem to know all about it.
I know a good deal more about you than you suspect. I know, for instance, that you're in love with a woman. It's perhaps a strange circumstance that we should both be in love with her. No one's to blame, and I ask no explanation. I ask only one thing. You won't give me the letters of transit? All right. But I want Ilza to be safe. I ask you as a favor to use the letters to take her away from Casablanca.
You love her that much?
Apparently you think of me only as the leader of a cause. Well, I'm also a human being. Yes, I love her that much.
You should not leave your back doors unlocked, Monsieur Reed.
Yeah, that's right, Cassell. No telling who might break in.
Monsieur Laszlo, you'll come with us. We have a warrant for your arrest.
Ricky, I advise you not to be too interested in what happens to Laszlo.
Oh, come on, stop bluffing. All you can do is find him a few thousand francs. You might as well let him go now. Hey, what are you charging him with?
I haven't quite decided. Meanwhile, if by any chance you are thinking of helping him to escape...
And what makes you think I'd do that?
Because, one, you bet 5,000 francs that he would, and two, you've got the letters of transit. Don't bother to deny it.
All right, get ready for a shock, Louis. Yeah, I have the letters, but I intend to use them myself. I'm leaving Casablanca on the last plane tonight.
What?
And I'm taking a friend with me. One you'd appreciate.
What friend?
Ilza Lund. Now that ought to put your mind at rest about my wanting to help Laszlo escape. He's the last man I'd want to see get out of here.
You didn't come here to tell me this. Since you have the letters, you know very well you can fill in your names and leave any time you wish.
Yeah. We have a legal right to go, but people sometimes are held in Casablanca in spite of their legal rights. Laszlo, for instance.
What makes you think I'd want to hold you?
Ilse is Laszlo's wife. She knows things that would interest Strasser tremendously. Louis, I'll make a deal with you.
Go on.
If you could get something really big against Laszlo, something that would chuck him in a concentration camp for years, that would be quite a haul for you, wouldn't it?
Yes. Germany, Vichy would be very grateful.
Mm-hmm. Then release Laszlo now. You'll be at my place half an hour before the plane leaves. I'll arrange to have Laszlo come there to pick up the letters of transit. That will give you criminal grounds to arrest him. You take him, and Ilse and I get away.
There's something about this I don't quite understand. You were never before interested in any woman.
Well, she just isn't any woman.
I see. How do you know that I'll keep my end of the bargain, or that you'll keep your end of the bargain?
You've got Laszlo inside?
Yes.
Well, let me see him alone now. We'll make the arrangements. Open up your microphones, and you'll hear every word. You would anyway.
Ricky, I'm really going to miss you. Apparently, you're the only one in Casablanca who has even less scruples than I. Well, Rick, 40 minutes, and you'll be on your way to Lisbon.
Yep.
Rick's Cafe. Oh, this place will never be the same without you.
I sold it to Ferrari. Oh, don't worry. He understands you're still the winner at roulette.
Oh, thanks. You have the letters, Rick?
Yeah, right here.
Tell me, when we searched the place, where were they?
I dropped them in Sam's piano.
Serves me right for not being musical.
Oh, here they are. You better wait in my office.
Yes, a good idea.
Hello, Ilse. Where's Laszlo?
Oh, he'll be right in. He's just paying the driver. Rick.
What?
Haven't you told Victor yet that he's going alone? He thinks I'm leaving with him.
I'll tell him later.
But it's all right, isn't it? You were able to arrange everything.
Oh, sure.
But Victor...
We'll tell him at the airport. The less time to think, the easier for all of us. Just trust me.
Yes.
I don't know how to thank you, Rick.
Save it. There's still lots of things to do.
I brought the money. It's in this briefcase.
Forget it. You'll need it in America.
But we made a deal.
Never mind that. Here, I got the letters here. They're made out in blank and signed by General Vagon. All you have to do is fill in the blanks.
I'm sorry, Laszlo. You're under arrest again. Accessory to the murder of the couriers from whom those letters were stolen.
You're surprised about my friend Ricky. Well, the explanation is simple. Love, it seems, has triumphed over virtue.
Oh, now take it easy, Louis. Nobody's going to be arrested. Not for a while yet.
Have you taken leave of your senses?
Yeah. Now sit down.
Oh, Ricky, Ricky, put down that gun.
Now, look, I wouldn't like to shoot you, Louis, but I will if you don't behave. Well,
under the circumstances, then I will sit down.
Yeah, and keep your hands on the table.
I'm very unhappy, Ricky.
There's a telephone right next to you, Louis. Now pick it up and dial the airport. We don't want any trouble out there either. Remember, Louis, this gun is pointed right at your heart.
Oh, that's my least vulnerable spot.
Hello?
Hello, hello? Is this the airport?
What are you talking about? This is Major Strasser.
Captain Reno, I want to speak to the operations manager.
What? Oh, go ahead, Reno.
Oh, monsieur, a man and a woman will arrive shortly at the airport.
Huh?
They will go aboard the Lisbon plane. They carry two letters of transit.
Ah!
There is to be absolutely no trouble made for them. Understand?
Right, be there right away.
Thank you.
Lisbon plane taking off in 5 minutes. This is the last call for passengers to please board the plane. Lisbon plane, 5 minutes.
You gotta hurry now, Laszlo. Take care of your luggage. We'll wait here.
Right back.
Here's a fountain pen, Louis. I think it might look nicer if you filled in the names on the letters.
You think of everything, don't you?
Yeah. And the names are Mr. and Mrs. Victor Laszlo.
Rick, why my name?
Because you're getting on the plane.
I don't understand. What about you?
Yes, what about you?
I'm staying here.
No, Rick. What's happened? Last night, you said...
Last night, I said I'd do the thinking for the both of us. Well, I've done a lot of it since then. It all adds up to just one thing. You're getting on that plane with Laszlo.
I won't leave you again, Rick. I won't.
Listen to me. Do you have any idea what you would have to look forward to if you stay here? We'd both wind up in a concentration camp.
I'm afraid Major Strasser might insist.
You're saying this only to make me go.
I'm saying it because it's true. Inside of us, we both know that you belong to Victor.
And what happens to you?
Well, I've got a job to do, Ilson. And where I'm going, you can't follow. I'm sounding noble now. I'm not very good at it. But it doesn't take much to see that the problems of two little people, well, they just don't amount to a hill of beans in this crazy world. Someday you'll understand that.
Everything's in order.
All except one thing. There's something you have to know before we leave.
Please, you don't have to explain anything.
But I'm going to, because it may make a difference to you later on. You know about Rick and me?
Yes.
But you didn't know I was with him last night at his place when you were there.
No.
She came to get the letters. She tried everything to get them and nothing worked. She did her best to convince me she was still in love with me. But that was over a long time ago. For your sake, she pretended it wasn't. Well, I let her pretend.
I understand.
Now, here are the letters. Good luck.
Welcome back to the fight, Rick. Are you ready, darling?
Yes, I am. Goodbye, Rick. God bless you.
Come on, you better hurry. You'll miss that plane.
Well, there they go, Rick. I was right. You are a sentimentalist.
I don't know what you're talking about.
You know I'll have to arrest you, of course.
Yeah, as soon as the plane takes off, Louis.
Renault!
Oh, I may still win my bet, Rick.
Renault, what was the meaning of that phone call?
Victor Laszlo is on that plane.
No, stop him! Stop him! What are you standing here for?
Because Monsieur Rick has a gun in my stomach.
I was willing to shoot Captain Renault. I'm willing to shoot you too, Major.
Are you crazy? Guards! Guards!
Don't call anyone, Major. I'll shoot.
I'll stop it myself. Wait! The plane must not take off! The plane must... What are you doing?
Oh, Captain Renault. Someone has just shot Major Strasser.
Oh. Oh!
Telephone Lieutenant Cassell immediately. And tell him to round up the usual suspects.
Yes, Captain.
Ricky, it might be a good idea for you to disappear from Casablanca for a while. There's a free French garrison at Brazzaville. I could be induced to arrange your passage.
Hey, look, you still owe me 5,000 francs.
5,000 francs should just about pay our expenses.
Our expenses?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Louis, I think this is the beginning of a beautiful friendship.
In private life, Hedy Lamarr is Mrs. John Loder. And so as we present our stars for a curtain call, I'll introduce them as Alan Ladd and Mr. and Mrs. John Loder. Although they've been married almost a year, it's our first chance to congratulate them.
Thank you, Mr. DeMille. You know, he beats me.
What do you mean? Come on, take off your coat, Mr. Loder.
At gin rummy.
You just saved me.
We want your expert opinion on something, Mr. DeMille.
For you, Hedy, anything.
When a husband and wife are in one of your plays, do you recommend a little extra rehearsing at home?
No, definitely, John. Offhand, I can't think of anything more pleasant than going over a love scene with Hedy.
If Mrs. DeMille is listening, he's only kidding.
We better drop this.
Well, I'll change the subject, C.B., because there's something I want to say to Humphrey Bogart's fans. It was a privilege for me to play a part that he made famous, but, well, really, nobody could play it like Bogie. And I'd like to wish him... And I'd like to wish him all the luck in the world over there in the Mediterranean area where he's entertaining American soldiers.
Luck and a safe return. I suppose Alan has shown you the photographs of his new daughter, Hedy.
Why, no.
Well, how'd I miss you? It seems I just have a dozen or so around or something.
Pure accident. But a beauty reminds me of something that I must ask John as man to man.
Straight answer?
Yes, John. I want to know if Hedy sees that that you get the right kind of soap at home.
Why, Mr. DeMille?
I'll answer that, Mr. DeMille, but I'm a little hurt you even ask. I have Lux soap in my dressing room at the studio, and naturally at home, too. I've used it for years.
Lucky Lux to be on such good terms with you, Hedy. Now let me tell you what we've planned for next week.
What's the show, C.B.?
One of the big dramatic prizes of the past year, the Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer hit, Random Harvest. And that isn't all. Because our stars will be Ronald Coleman and Greer Garson. They're the original stars of the picture. And next Monday night, we present them both in this powerful story of a soldier and the girl who loves him. A great drama made even greater by the artistry of Greer Garson and Ronald Coleman.
It's a wonderful picture, Mr. DeMille. I'll be listening. Good night.
Goodbye.
Good night.
Good night. Good night. That applause goes from coast to coast. Ladies and gentlemen, there's a tiny island in the mid-Pacific called Tarawa. That pronunciation, incidentally, is from the National Geographic Society. That island will never be important economically. It is no rich source of raw materials. But the name of Tarawa has been written indelibly into American memory in the blood of American sons. Out of the first group of Marines who landed on Tarawa, more than half will never fight again. Is there anyone listening who can truthfully say, I can't afford to buy any more war bonds? That was just a tiny island. The continent of Europe is yet to come. The tempo of invasion is moving ever faster. That's why we have a fourth war loan drive. That's why every American who deserves that name will buy at least one extra war bond now. We must not only back the attack, we must help our boys to lead it. Our sponsors, the makers of Lux Toilet Soap, join me in inviting you to be with us again next Monday night when the Lux Radio Theater presents Ronald Coleman and Greer Garson in Random Harvest. This is Cecil B. DeMille saying good night to you from Hollywood.
Alan Ladd appeared through the cooperation of Paramount Pictures, whose current production is Miracle of Morgan's Creek.
John Loder is currently seen in the Warner Brothers picture Old Acquaintance and is now making the Jules Levy production The Hairy Ape. Edgar Barrier is now seen in the Universal picture Flesh and Fantasy. Our music was directed by Louis Silvers. And this is your announcer, John M. Kennedy, reminding you to tune in again next Monday night to hear Ronald Coleman and Greer Garson in Random Harvest.
Have you heard about Spry?
Your ration point go farther.
Go further.
Go farther.
Your ration point go farther.
Further when you're cooking with Spry.
Yep, Spry is the shortening by. Women everywhere are saying...
A jar of Spry, please.
A jar of Spry.
A jar of Spry, please.
Spry.
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 Now, from the makers of Cold Water Omo...
Didn't Dr. Seligman say anything before he died, Watney?
Yes, he did. I didn't think it wise to tell Sparshot. He muddles things up, sir. Seligman said, I know how they did it. It's all done by mirrors.
Mrs. Peel looked down at the crumpled envelope in her hand. It had been the one that Frederick Williams was scribbling on when he met his death. On the back of the envelope, Mrs. Peel noticed for the first time an outline drawing of a lighthouse. Looking up and gazing out to sea, the first thing she noticed was the point jutting out into the distance, upon which was a lighthouse.
All done by mirrors. I think I know what my next port of call will be.
The Avengers. John Steed and Emma Peel, The Avengers.
Episode 4 of this story, in which John Steed realizes why Emma Peel is playing this case solo and follows through on the suggestion that it's all done by mirrors. Young Watney was slightly more than confused. On his first major case, he was investigating security leaks at the Carmaddock Research Establishment. Since he'd arrived with Mrs. Peel, three men had died, and Mrs. Peel had been viciously attacked. Watney thought of Mother and was worried. Mrs. Peel's approach to the whole affair didn't help him either. Her method seemed highly unorthodox. She'd left all the inside work to him and appeared intent on chasing vague clues all over the surrounding countryside. And now...
You're going out to that lighthouse, Mrs. Peel?
That's right.
But why? I mean, I don't see.
I'll tell you why when I've been there. Bye for now, Watney. Watney, Watney. Oh, and if you get through to Mother, give Steve my love. Goodbye.
Mrs. Peel swept out, leaving Watney even more baffled. A short while after that, Mrs. Peel, at the wheel of her car, headed up the cliff road. She parked skillfully by the rocky path that led to the lighthouse. The lighthouse looked remarkably like the one drawn on the envelope. Mrs. Peel walked boldly up the path and banged on the door. Kettridge, a tough, rugged seaman dressed in traditional clothes, trousers stuffed into sea boots, a blue turtleneck sweater and a grubby cap, stood in the doorway.
Yeah?
I'd like to see the lighthouse, keeper.
There isn't one.
Pardon?
This lighthouse doesn't function anymore. It's a private residence.
Kettridge turned away and was about to close the heavy door when Mrs. Peel pushed by him and found herself in the hallway.
Well, in that case, I'd like to speak to the owner.
Now, just look here. You can't force your way in.
What's the trouble, Kettridge?
The speaker was a young, handsome, intelligent-looking man, extremely well-dressed, coming down the stairs.
Can I help you at all?
You must see the owner, busting her way in here.
Well, you must forgive Kettridge. He isn't used to visitors and sometimes becomes a little too diligent. I'm Timothy Barlow. The Colonel's secretary.
Mrs. Emma Peel, how do you do?
How do you do? Well, Mrs. Peel, the Colonel doesn't like to be disturbed with trivialities. So perhaps you would enlarge upon the nature of your business.
Well, it's about the man who fell over the cliffs here recently.
Now, look here.
I would hardly say it's a triviality, Mr. Barlow.
As you say, hardly. Excuse me one moment.
Barlow moved across the room and picked up a brass speaking tube. He blew down it, listened into it, and then spoke.
Colonel, I have a Mrs. Peel down here. She would like a word with you, if it's at all possible. Yes, I think so. Yes, sir, very good.
Barlow replaced the speaking tube, smiled, and said,
Colonel Withers will see you. This way.
Barlow led the way towards the stairs and began to climb them. Mrs. Peel followed.
The Colonel in the lighthouse?
Yes, it's odd, isn't it? Very simple explanation, though. The Colonel comes from a family of soldiers. Yes, Hardy always wanted to be a...
A sailor?
Yes, that's it. So when he retired, he bought this place.
How long does this go on for? The stairs?
Oh, about a year.
What?
Oh, that's the Colonel's little joke. There are 365 steps, you see, so he says it takes about a year to climb
365.
Them.
I wish you hadn't told me that.
It's not all that bad.
No, it isn't that. It's just that I'm bound to have to count them. Lead on, Mr. Barlow.
While Mrs. Peel was expending a great deal of energy climbing the stairs of the lighthouse, John Steed and Mother were lying back in a couple of floating plastic armchairs in the swimming pool. Mother appeared to be fishing. He tugged on a length of line. Steed opened an eye, began to open his mouth, and then shut both.
Ah, champagne, Steed.
Steed opened both eyes. Mother had pulled some rather costly French champagne from the water.
It would help to pass the time. Thank you, Mother.
Mother expertly opened the champagne, reached for a glass that rested on the floating table, and poured Steed a drink. Steed, wobbling a bit in his seat, took it without a drop being spilt.
Splendid! Far too precious to waste. Cheers, Steed.
Cheers.
What may reported in?
Not yet. The red telephone could ring at any moment, telling us that the case is over.
I rather doubt it. Watney is too raw, inexperienced.
As I've said before, we all have to start somewhere. That low. I bet he wouldn't mind swapping places with you right now.
Well, I might be wishing the same thing.
Anyway, Emma Peel is there. She is well able to look after herself.
Extremely capable young woman. You said so yourself. One of the best operators you've got.
The best.
Well, then, she's a woman.
As such, she is vulnerable.
Steve, those kind of feelings are strictly contrary to the rules of...
Rules, Mother?
You've never acknowledged them, let alone abided by them.
I can't help it. It's my way of working. And this charade of close arrest. Now, you promised I could get out of it if I wanted to.
Well, I can't stop you, but I can remind you...
Remind me?
Of what? Remember when you were taught to fly, Steve?
Of course.
Remember your first solo. If someone had snatched the controls from you then, up there alone, head in the clouds, wouldn't you have felt cheated?
You mean Watney? But he's nothing compared to Mrs.
Solo for Mrs. Peel.
Exactly. As I have said, we've all got to start somewhere. Now, what about some more champagne, eh?
In the lighthouse, Barlow and Emma Peel paused for breath at one of the small windows and gazed out.
A long way down?
Only a short way up. Just get through the month of December, and we're there.
30 days past September, April, June, and all the rest have... Right. 31, 30, 29, 28, 27, 26, 35... Four, three, two, one.
Yes, well, we're here.
Come in.
Mrs. Peel, sir. Mr. Peel, Colonel Withers.
How do you do, Colonel?
Spartan, Amazonian.
I beg your pardon?
Not the slightest bit out of breath. I like that. Physical fitness, I like it. How do, Mrs. Peel? Well, Valley, you must have thought it important to have brought Mrs. Peel on the way up here.
It's about poor Mr. Guthrie, sir.
Yeah. Relative of yours, eh?
Not exactly a friend. I'm just interested.
Idle curiosity, morbid interest.
Intimate concern.
Nah. That's better. Not enough concern nowadays, not half enough. Well, now, I'm afraid I can't help you.
Well, I haven't asked for help yet.
Hey, you got spirit, eh? Like that, yes, like that. Still can't help, never even knew the man.
Oh, perhaps you saw him.
Hey, saw him? Did I bother?
Well, it's possible, sir, when you were in the villages.
No,
sir. I mean...
No, I meant from over here. This lighthouse overlooks the cliff head, and I thought, well, perhaps through your telescope. This one, I mean.
Ah, interested in telescopes, are you? One doesn't look at land through a telescope, ma'am. Look through it now. Go on. Go along. Look through it.
Oh, all right. I always like these things.
What do you see, eh?
The sea.
Exactly. That's what you see, the sea. The great grand rolling ocean and ships. Often ships, grubby little tankers, liners, ships under sail, under steam, underway to exotic destinations. No, Mrs. Field, you won't find me looking at the land.
Nevertheless. If one swings it around like this...
Mrs. Peel swung the telescope towards the cliffs.
On a clear day, you could practically reach out and touch the cliffs and almost shake hands with your visitors.
Eh? I've already told that I never look at the... visitors?
Well, one visitor. She's just getting out of a taxi. She could have a long stay in mind, judging from the luggage.
Barlow!
Barlow moved forward, excused himself to Mrs. Peel, seized the telescope and gazed through it.
No idea who she is, sir.
Well, find out. You know how I hate being disturbed.
Colonel Withers shot Mrs. Peel a significant glance. She took the hint. Barlow had already left the tower.
So you didn't know Mr. Guthrie, Colonel?
That is correct.
Then I don't suppose you knew his friend, Mr. Williams, either.
No, probably not. Better ask Barlow.
You rely very much upon Barlow.
He deals with the trivialities, Mrs. Peel. The trivialities.
Thank you, Colonel.
Mrs. Peel left the Colonel and began the descent of the 365 stairs. Halfway down, she paused and looked out of the window. There was a lighted cigarette resting on the window ledge. Mrs. Peel noted that she wasn't alone on the spiral stairway. Then she heard it. The unmistakable sound of a gun being loaded.
Listen every evening, Monday to Friday, to John Steed and Emma Peel, The Avengers. Brought to you by the makers of Coldwater Omo.
Presents Hollywood. Lever Brothers Company, the makers of Lux Toilet Soap, bring you the Lux Radio Theater, starring James Mason and Pamela Colino in Five Fingers. Ladies and gentlemen, your producer, Mr. Irving Cummings.
Greetings from Hollywood, ladies and gentlemen. Tonight we bring you the true story of a man who committed one of the most infamous of crimes. A clever spy who sold his services to the highest bidder. It's 20th Century Fox's drama of Five Fingers, directed by my friend Joe Mankiewicz. Five Fingers, which opened a safe containing top secret documents. And starring in his original role will be James Mason. We are delighted to welcome Pamela Colino to our stage to co-star with her husband in Five Fingers. And speaking of thigh fingers, remember, it just takes the tips of your fingers to cream that gentle Lux lather into your skin. Watch what its wonderful skin tonic action can do for your complexion. Yes, Lux toilet soap can make your skin smoother, fresher, and give you that radiantly alive look that comes from your daily Lux toilet soap facials. Now, Five Fingers, starring James Mason as Diello and Pamela Colino as Countess Daviska.
This account begins in 1944. The war was at its height, but some nations still were neutral, among them Turkey. One evening early in March, an attaché of the German embassy at Ankara, a man named Moisich, was about to enter his quarters when a stranger appeared from out of the shadows.
Whatever you do, don't raise your voice.
Who are you? What do you want?
Take me to your office.
Either you tell me who you are
Don't be a fool. I've brought you the opportunity of a lifetime. I can make you the envy of the entire German Foreign Service. Now, open the door.
The stranger was in his middle 30s, well-dressed, and as Moisich soon found out, exceedingly sure of himself.
Let me warn you, Moisich. Not one word of this must reach anyone except your ambassador. My life will depend on your discretion.
A responsibility I do not choose to accept.
I'm afraid you have no choice. Your life will depend upon it, too. You see, certain British documents classed as most secret have come into my possession. The price is £20,000, English pounds sterling.
20,000? Who are you?
I am a spy, obviously. I'm also a businessman.
And you consider it sound business to pay £20,000 to an unidentified amateur for a set of so-called secret documents?
Not so-called, not secret. I said most secret. You will inform Herr von Papen of my offer. Naturally, he'll have to check with Berlin. I'll telephone you on Friday for his answer.
I must have more information.
If you accept, I'll return at 7 o'clock Friday evening with two rolls of film containing photographs of the documents. And I will receive from you the sum of £20,000 in English banknotes. For each subsequent roll of film, the price will be £15,000. Is this clear?
It is not clear at all. What documents? Containing what?
For one thing, the English have been discussing with the Turks their possible participation in the war.
A matter of pure supposition.
I have the minutes of their secret talks. Your ambassador, Herr von Papen, would find them enlightening and frightening.
What else?
The latest Allied plans for the shuttle bombing of certain Balkan targets. When and by whom and how many?
Go on.
Don't be greedy, Moisich. What do you expect for £20,000?
How did you obtain such information?
That is no concern of yours, nor is my identity. And please, do not have me followed. You Germans have no talent for it. You keep wanting to get ahead of the people you follow. Yes, destiny extends its hand to you. Take it and hold on. Good night, Moisich.
The man left. Moisich did not have him followed. But had he done so, he would have discovered that his visitor was in the employ of the British Embassy, the ambassador's valet. And like any proper valet, he was at his post when the ambassador returned shortly before midnight from a reception.
A pleasant reception, sir?
Diplomatic receptions are never pleasant, Diello. The faces may be, but never the motives.
Your coat, sir. Allow me.
Speaking of pleasant faces, Diello, at one time, weren't you in the service of the Countess Daviska?
I was the valet to her late husband, sir, at the Court of St. James.
She was at the reception.
Is she well, sir?
As charming, lovely as ever, but not so well off. The Nazis in Poland have confiscated everything she owns.
I'm sorry to hear it, sir. She was a lady of great wealth.
And she used it well. More than anyone I have ever known, Countess Daviska symbolized the world in which she lived. A world of beauty and luxury. Gone forever, I'm afraid.
Let us hope not, sir. I put the survey of Turkish manganese beside your bed, together with your journal.
Oh, yes. Thank you. That will be all, Diello.
One moment, sir. Your capsule.
Diello, have you ever considered the possibility that you might, just for once, forget something?
Often, sir.
I don't think you'd ever get over it.
Nor do I. Good night, Your Excellency.
Three days later, the German ambassador, Franz von Papen, sent for his aide, Moisich. He had just received a dispatch from Berlin.
Well, it's here, Moisich. Read it.
Transaction approved. Take every precaution. Essential you determine identity of agent. Expect immediate report.
It was sent by Carlton Gruner. Well, here's the money.
£20,000?
There's no need to count it, Moisich. I have not taken any of it.
Oh, sir, but I had no intention. Believe me, I was just...
Are you sure you can handle this alone?
Oh, yes, sir. And I can develop the film myself.
Good. The fewer people who know about this, the better. Particularly if this fellow makes fools of us. What was your impression, Moisich?
Arrogant, spoiled, cynical. A British aristocrat, if ever I saw one.
Fantastic. And by the way, a code name has been assigned to him. He is to be referred to as Cicero. The name is the personal choice of Herr Ribbentrop.
Has it any significance, sir?
None that I know of. Except the surprising fact that Herr Ribbentrop had even heard of Cicero. He'll be here tonight?
He said 7 o'clock, sir.
Keep your wits sharp. A great deal depends on you.
Yes, sir. Thank you, sir.
Moisich.
Yes, Your Excellency?
The money. Here. You forgot it.
Your Excellency.
Promptly at 7 o'clock, Diello arrived at Moisich's office. On the desk lay the pile of banknotes.
Ah, you have the money, I see. Thank you, Moisich.
It's a film.
Here, two rolls. Oh, fetch me a drink while I count it, will you? Scotch whiskey, please. I'm sure you must have some.
We have the best of everything.
One of the pleasures of duty in a neutral country. You Germans can drink fine Scotch whiskey, and your enemies can fill up on fine German beer.
You can count the money later. It goes into the safe until I have developed the film.
Are you going to develop the film yourself?
Yes. There is a dark room down the hall.
Then perhaps you'd better drink this. You're trembling like a butterfly.
You will remain here until I come back.
I'll lock the door. I won't let anyone in but you. Now hurry.
Moisich was stunned by the contents of the film as well he might have been. Back in his office, he did his best to hide his excitement.
Interesting snapshots, aren't they?
The documents seem to be genuine.
Don't be pompous, Moisich.
My government has authorized me to make further arrangements with you.
Splendid. £15,000 for each additional roll of film. Oh, and about my present fee. I've counted the money. It was all there.
That money is in the safe.
It was.
You opened the safe. It's open.
You see, I said to myself, if I were an ambitious attaché like Moisich, what would be the combination of my safe?
How dare you?
And the answer? 1-30-33, the day Hitler came to power. I imagine that would open half the safes in Germany. What an unimaginative lot you are. Well, don't be upset, Moisich. There was nothing else worth taking.
My government is prepared to pay £10,000 per roll. No more.
We won't haggle. I'll risk my life to get these photographs. My price is quite reasonable. You'll pay it.
Not until we know who you are and how you obtain such information.
That is my business. I will tell you this. I work at the British Embassy. Sooner or later, you'll find that out anyway.
You have been assigned a code name. Cicero.
Cicero. A man of nobility, eloquence, and dissatisfaction. I like that name.
When will you bring more film?
A week from tonight. Have the money ready. Oh, and change the combination of your safe. May I suggest one? Try 6-18-15. That's the date of the Battle of Waterloo. Good night, Moisich.
Diello left. Then he took a walk which led him to a rather shabby section of the town, and to a rooming house, the quarters of Countess Anna Stavisca.
Oh, it's you, Diello. Well, come in.
Do I disturb you, madam?
Not at all. Fortunately, I have a dinner engagement, but he is an undersecretary and he's used to waiting.
Any particular undersecretary, madam?
Undersecretaries are never particular, Diello. Perhaps that's why they take me to dinner.
It is far more likely that in madam's presence they feel like ambassadors.
Of all the diplomats I've ever known, you are still the best.
It is my good fortune that you have known so few valets.
Diello, please. I've spoken to you before about this. You're the valet to the British ambassador, not to me. Now sit down and tell me the gossip.
I'll begin with the British ambassador, madam. He finds you the most radiant, the most sought-after lady in Ankara. To him, you are the symbol of everything worth having and wanting.
His symbol of the good old days. That's me. You see this, Diello? An emerald. The last of the lot. I want you to take this to the pawn shop tomorrow. I couldn't face another trip.
Would it not be pleasant to make just one more trip, madam? This time to redeem your jewels?
Redeem?
With English pounds. Here.
Where did you get that money?
It's yours. £5,000.
But it can't be real.
There's nothing as real as money.
But I may never be able to pay this back.
I don't want it back.
But I can't permit you. Why, it must be the savings of a lifetime.
Not savings, madam. I'm not a saving man. A business venture of mine has paid off handsomely.
But what has it to do with me?
I propose to advance you £5,000 in return for certain favors. I have here another £15,000. I couldn't possibly keep such sums at the embassy, nor do I want to draw attention to myself by depositing into in a bank. But you, madam, you could keep it for me.
Go on, dear.
You could leave this grubby room, rent an attractive villa, live as you please.
But how would all this be a favor to you?
From time to time, I shall want to transact my business in privacy. You would set aside certain quarters for me.
I see.
If all goes well, I shall have some £200,000 within 12 weeks. That's the amount I've set as my goal.
And then?
South America. A new life, a new name. That, of course, will require a passport, visas, letters of credit. You could be of great help to me in obtaining them.
How?
I'll explain that when the time comes.
Is there anything else?
Nothing. Except all I've told you must remain extremely confidential.
Seems little enough to ask for £5,000. Are you going to tell me what your business is?
Sometime, perhaps. Not now.
This is quite a trust you put in me. You seem very sure of yourself.
I'm sure of you, madam.
Oh?
For 3 years, I was valet to your late husband. It is said that no man is a hero to his valet. It is also true that no woman is a mystery to her husband's valet.
You know me that well?
Well enough. The source of your money has never concerned you any more than the source of your electric light. They became worrisome only when they were shut off.
Quite true. But there's pride. I have pride.
A great deal. I depend on your pride. You'll find it intolerable to have it known that your wealth was the gift of a servant. So, you will keep your mouth shut tight.
Get me a brandy. There on the table.
Of course.
No, Diello. Not two glasses. I shall drink only out of one, thank you. Do you know why I discharged you after my husband died?
I think I do, madam.
Because you made me uneasy. I felt you had an evil genius for something. Little did I know it was for making money.
That's a lie. That wasn't why I made you uneasy.
No?
No. You were attracted to me. It was upsetting to feel that way about a valet and to feel that the valet knew it all the time. Have I offended you?
You'll soon be very rich.
Everything worth having and wanting. The ambassador didn't say that about you. I did. That's how I've always thought about you.
And now you want me to go with you to South America?
Yes.
Away from the war, the intrigues, the fears.
And the poverty.
And it would be right for us now. Because now at last, we are equals.
Yes.
Equals. Who's lying now, Diello? Where are you going?
Madam has a dinner engagement, and we seem suddenly to have run out of gossip.
You made me a business proposition. I agree to that part of it. As for the rest, it's not an impossibility. It's merely an improbability, and above all, an impertinence.
Because I address you as an equal?
No. Because you address me as a servant. Because in the manner of an inferior, you tried to buy something you didn't think you merited on your own. Now, let us get down to the details of business.
As Madam wishes.
My name is Anna.
Yes. Anna. Thank you.
It was inevitable, of course, that the British Embassy would discover that many of their carefully guarded secrets were now known to the Nazis. When this disturbing news reached London, a counter-espionage agent named Travers was sent to the ambassador at Ankara.
We've made all sorts of preliminary checks, Mr. Travers. So far we've failed. I haven't the slightest idea how the German Embassy is getting this information.
And if I were to assume that the source is someone here? Here at the embassy, sir.
But all our personnel and permanent employees have had security clearance from London.
You'll forgive me, but I've never known a self-respecting spy without security clearance. Where do you store your state papers, sir?
Right here in my study, in that safe.
Uh-huh. What about the code room?
McFadden can answer that.
Code room is under constant guard night and day.
Sir Frederick, don't you think that this lamentable lapse in security could be due to a slip of the lip at some party or reception?
My lips are not in the habit of slipping, Mr. Travers.
Nor do I imply that they are, sir, but our secret information does pass through other hands. It might pass through other lips. Now, McFadden's been telling me about an unattached lady, a certain Countess Staviska. It is possible, is it not, that...
I beg your pardon, Your Excellency.
What is it, Diello?
It's time for your capsule, sir.
Oh, thank you, Diello. Just set it down.
Yes, sir.
You were saying, Travers?
Your valet?
Yes. He's been with me for years.
Ah. Well, about the Countess. According to McFadden, her circumstances have taken a startling change for the better. Does anyone know the source of her sudden good fortune?
I'm not able to answer that. However, she has many friends on either side, the Lied and Axis.
Mm. Now, by the way, you'll be interested to know that I am not the only newcomer to Ankara. Colonel von Richter was also on the train from Istanbul.
Von Richter? The Gestapo?
Yes, traveling under a Swiss passport. He calls himself Rudolf Hodler, a tobacco buyer from Bern.
He went directly to the German embassy, sir.
No doubt he's reporting to von Papen, as I am reporting to you, sir.
If we only knew what they're saying.
Yes, Sir Frederick. If we only knew.
Von Papen's reception of von Richter was anything but cordial. Von Papen had good reason to be aroused.
So, you come here seeking confirmation of the documents we bought from Cicero. You had your confirmation on the 5th of April. We sent you the British plans to bomb the Poleski oil fields. Well, but they bombed them, weren't they? Thousands of dead. Millions of gallons of precious oil destroyed. What is the price of confirmation, Herr von Richter?
Regarding Cicero, it remains the opinion of General Kaltenbrunner and myself that all this still could be a British trap. Now then, you seem very certain about a connection between the Countess Staviska and Cicero. May I ask why?
Because it is obvious. Why else would he choose her new home for his next meeting with Moisic?
What a strange and sudden and perfect relationship. Too strange, too sudden, and too perfect. The unknown Cicero and the well-known Countess, well-known for her anti-German sentiments.
Yet only a month ago, she pleaded with me for an opportunity to work in our interests.
For love, Herr von Papen, or for money?
For money, of course. A loan until the time when we return her property we've confiscated in Poland.
I want to talk to Cicero myself. Moisisch, when do you meet with him next?
Thursday evening, Herr Colonel.
Then you will arrange for Mr. Hodler, the Swiss businessman, to be present.
On Thursday night, the Countess Staviska was again entertaining. Among her guests was the tobacco buyer from Switzerland. During the evening, she led him through the house to a secluded wing where someone was waiting for him.
You will find your man in that room, Monsieur Hodler. I shall see that you are not disturbed.
Thank you, madame.
Are you too a diplomat, monsieur, like Herr Moisich?
I suppose you could call me a middleman.
There are so many Swiss middlemen. It seems to be a national occupation.
What could be more natural? After all, we Swiss have been in the middle for hundreds of years.
Just knock on the door, monsieur.
Colonel von Richter, sit down, please. Moisich tells me you're to be the new intermediary.
That is correct. Moisich is too well known here. It will be safer for me to deal with you.
I'm happy to hear it. I share your concern.
The Countess, have you told her who I am?
Of course not.
Does she know the nature of your business?
No.
Then just what is her relation?
My dear Colonel, I didn't invite you here to discuss my personal affairs. We have some business to transact. Did you bring the money?
You will be paid after we have developed the film.
During the past weeks, I have sold Moisich 50 photographs, all of genuine secret documents. That's proof enough of my good faith. Henceforth, you will pay on delivery. No? Well, possibly you are no longer interested in the strategic plans of the Allies for the entire Mediterranean area.
A second front?
I do not know the number of the front. I do know that in these documents, Mr. Churchill keeps referring to the soft underbelly of Europe. Of course, I could take the films to von Papen and ask that he himself query the German high command as to their interests.
Very well. Here. £15,000.
Why, you had it with you all the time.
Who are you, anyway?
If I told you I was, the valet to the British ambassador, would you believe me?
Certainly not.
You see?
At least tell me why you are selling us this information.
I thought that was self-evident, for money.
But you must have some other motive. Perhaps you share our disgust with British decadence.
If I have a disgust for anything, it is for poverty.
You sell us information which will help us win the war, Yet you insist upon being paid in money with a very dubious future. British pounds.
What makes you think I think Germany will win the war?
Apart from the money we pay you, you attach little importance to these documents. Why?
In the first place, I cannot sell you the intelligence to make the proper use of them. In the second place, by informing a man about to be hanged of the exact size, location, and strength of the rope, you do not remove either the hangman or the certainty of his being hanged. And now I'm sure you will want to rejoin the party. 1 week from tonight, I shall have more film for you. Good night, Colonel.
I trust your meeting was a happy one, Monsieur Hodler?
Quite satisfactory, thank you.
And you will honor us soon again?
The honor will be mine. Good night, madame.
How charmingly you Swiss click your heels. Good night, monsieur.
Act two of Five Fingers, starring James Mason as Diello and Pamela Colino as the Countess.
Two weeks went by. The man known to the British as Diello the Valet and to the Nazis as Cicero the Spy continued his audacious operations. How did he get his information? Months before, he had learned the combination of the safe in the ambassador's study. Removing the documents, he would place them under a lamp. But the ordinary electric light bulb was not bright enough. So he would substitute a much more powerful one and then, with a tiny pocket camera, quickly photograph each new document. In a matter of moments, the papers would be back in the safe and the original bulb restored to the lamp. Simple and incredibly bold, and bound sooner or later to be discovered. But not yet. No, not yet.
Come in, Diello. Another profitable evening?
Profitable enough to bring the total to £75,000.
Why don't you stop now? Why go on playing with fire?
What makes you think I am?
Oh, don't treat me like an idiot child. Your friend Hodler, he isn't Swiss. I know a Prussian when I see one.
Does it matter to you?
Your safety matters to me. My security depends upon yours.
Forgive me. I keep thinking of myself as a man. I keep forgetting I'm a valet who pays dividends.
I can't see why a man as rich as you should go on pressing the trousers of the British ambassador.
That's where I get my money. I steal the loose change from his pockets.
Before you go, get me a drink, will you? Tell me, where do you plan to settle when you go to South America?
Rio. There's no city like it in the world.
When did you decide to go there?
Many years ago. I was a cabin boy on a dirty tramp steamer. I can remember looking up at a villa high on the mountainside above the harbor. I could see a man on a balcony. He was wearing a white dinner jacket. He seemed close enough to touch, and yet he was beyond the reach of anyone. I swore then that someday I would be that man.
My drink, please. Do you have a nationality, Diello? You're not a native Englishman, are you?
Albanian. English by adoption. In England, it seemed profitable to become a gentleman, so I went into service. As you have pointed out, I am not yet a gentleman, but I am the best of the gentlemen's gentlemen, which reminds me the ambassador will be wondering what has kept me.
And what will you tell him?
Yes, Anna? What shall I tell him? I shall tell him that I was detained by a Turkish chambermaid.
I think that I shall find Rio very much to my liking. You have waited a long time to kiss me. You don't have to wait any longer.
Anna.
Yes, Diello?
Get me a drink.
During the following weeks, Diello's fortune grew to £155,000. And yet, despite the unerring accuracy of the information which he sold to the Germans, they stubbornly and amazingly refused to act upon it, still afraid that Diello was really a British agent. At the British Embassy, Travers, the counter-espionage officer, continued on the merry-go-round which had led him exactly nowhere. But one morning, he asked the ambassador to send for Diello.
We feel you can help us, Diello. After all, you were valet to the husband of Countess Davisca for some time.
I'm sure you learned more about both of them than we could in a lifetime of investigation.
Infinitely more, Mr. Travers.
Well, then tell me, did you ever hear the Countess express sympathy for the Nazis?
To my knowledge, the Countess never spoke of countries or of political parties, sir. The world to her was made up of individual people whom she either liked or disliked.
Well, would you consider her to have been pro-German?
The Countess was capable of being pro-anything, sir, if it made for a congenial dinner party.
Hmm. Then you would consider it possible for her to have become a German agent, hmm?
Only for money, sir.
Of which she has suddenly acquired a most generous supply.
I know nothing about spies, of course, but I can remember that the Countess had a remarkable talent for receiving confidences from important people. The late Count always relied upon her for acquiring information.
Thank you, dear Lena. That's all.
Oh, I'll be dining at the American Embassy. You may take the evening off.
Thank you, sir.
Clever chap.
He told us nothing. And the fact remains that Von Papen still anticipates every move I make. Well, Travers, no argument?
No, Your Excellency. No argument.
That same evening, Colonel von Richter was once again at Countess Tavisca's home, meeting with Diello.
Not very nervous tonight, Colonel. Is something troubling you?
This house is far too dangerous a meeting place for us. I wouldn't be surprised if the British were watching it.
Not yet, but they will. They suspect the Countess is a German agent.
Are you serious?
And all the while you suspected she was a British agent. Amusing, isn't it?
We should never have met here.
From now on, we won't. Do you know the Aslan Hane Mosque in the old quarter? Moisich will find it for you. We'll meet there a week from tonight.
A week is too long. It must be sooner.
Really? Why?
Because there is something about which we must secure information as quickly as possible. A certain code word has appeared in several of the documents you brought us last week. The word is Overlord. We are convinced that Overlord is the name for their so-called second front. What we must know is the place and the date, the where and the when.
I can understand your curiosity.
I'll pay you well for it. £40,000.
Generous of you. But is information of that nature likely to turn up at the British Embassy in Ankara?
Don't you read the documents you sell us?
I photograph everything that's stamped secret, most secret, and top secret. I'm not particularly interested in what they contain.
You photographed a dispatch last week stating that the ambassador would receive a copy of the revised strategic plan for Overlord within 10 days.
£40,000, you said?
For the where and the when.
We'll meet at the Aslan Hane Mosque on Thursday night. Bring the money with you.
In the morning, Mr. Travers, for the first time, had some good news for the ambassador. The British had succeeded in breaking the diplomatic code of the Nazi ambassador, von Papen.
And now, for a change, sir, you can eavesdrop on von Papen. All right, McFadden, will you read the message?
This is from von Papen, sir, to the Reich Foreign Minister in Berlin. In reply to your query concerning the authenticity of documents obtained from Cicero, I am firmly convinced the material is genuine. Cicero lives within the British Embassy. Obviously, he has access to top-secret information.
Lives here?
Kaltenbrunner's failure to evaluate the documents and von Richter's refusal to make them available to me is a tragic blunder. I strongly urge you to bring this matter to the personal attention of the Führer without delay, signed von Papen.
Cicero?
That's the code name for their informer, sir. And now, with your permission, I'll order a house search at once.
But an open search will put him right on his guard.
It can't be helped. If we can't catch him, we've got to frighten him. I'll have to make him stop for a while.
As you know, I'm expected in Cairo tomorrow evening. Until I return, take any security measure you think necessary.
Well, for one thing, sir, I suggest the combination on your safe be changed and safety devices installed. 12 members of the staff here have access to most of your secret documents. There's also McFadden and you and I.
Cicero could be any one of us.
Yes, sir. Any one of us. Well, McFadden, you better start changing that combination.
How long will it take?
A few days, sir, but I can install an alarm bell in a matter of hours.
I'm sorry to disturb you, sir. About your trip to Cairo, shall I pack your uniforms?
I won't be needing them. Thank you, Diello.
Very well, sir. I'll close your bags.
By the way, Diello, don't be upset if these gentlemen ransack my quarters while I'm gone.
There'll be no need for that, I'm sure, sir.
On Thursday night, Moisich and von Richter appeared as scheduled at the entrance of the Aslan Hane Mosque. But the man they were looking for was not there.
He has never been late before, never. Could it be possible, sir, that the British have found him out?
It is more possible that the British have known about him all the time. It is very curious how easily Cicero acquired the documents he wanted to sell, and how when only once we name the information we want to buy, how mysteriously he fails to deliver it.
What does the colonel propose to do now?
Precisely nothing. All spies in time outlive their usefulness. I am afraid, Moises, that your friend Cicero has just about outlived his. Now, drive me back to the embassy.
No, Diello did not appear that night at the mosque. He went instead to call on the Countess de Visca.
So you can be very proud of me, Diello. You have everything you asked for, your passport, your visas, and your tickets. Your name is now Roberto Antonini.
Well done, Signora Antonini.
It was nothing. One of my many pleasant wifely duties.
How much did they cost?
£5,000. Another 1,000 for birth and marriage certificates.
And the tickets?
2 first-class compartments, separate cars on the Istanbul Express leaving tomorrow evening.
And the ship?
An Argentine passenger freighter sailing from Istanbul directly to Rio. Day after tomorrow at sundown.
Now remember, you're to take no notice of me whatsoever on the train. When we reach Istanbul, we'll go aboard the ship at once. How did it go at the bank?
The size of the deposit created quite a stir. The manager seemed extremely curious. But the papers will be ready tomorrow morning.
How much?
Another 1,000. And all my powers of persuasion, this side of respectability.
That leaves roughly £130,000. In dollars, about 600,000. In Brazilian cruzeiros, about 11.5 million.
Plus the 40,000 you got tonight.
No, I withdrew from that transaction. The market's getting shaky. I've decided to retire. You have before you an Argentine gentleman of leisure about to take up residence in Brazil.
I'm glad. We have more than enough anyway.
We? We have more than enough? My dear Signora Antonini, where I come from, a man's money is his own. And if his wife is a good wife, he gives her some from time to time.
Whatever you say, Roberto.
Will you miss being a countess?
Not for a moment, darling. Not for a moment.
In the morning, Mr. Travis, for the first time, had reason to specifically question the ambassador's valet.
Oh, Diello, may I ask what you're doing with those letters?
Please, sir. Mr. Morrison gave them to me. The ambassador's personal mail, sir.
Oh, I see.
Perhaps you'd better take charge of it, sir, until he returns from Cairo.
Yes, I think we'd better put it in the safe. How many letters are there?
5, sir.
Mm-hmm. Well, this one seems quite personal. Lady's handwriting. You were looking at it, weren't you?
It's perfumed, sir. It struck me as such a pity that so few ladies use perfumed letter paper these days.
By the way, Diello, weren't you away from the embassy last night between 9 and 10?
Yes, sir.
Would you mind accounting for your movements?
Not at all, sir. I walked for a while on the boulevard, stopped for a drink at the Yüksel Palace, then back to the embassy.
Huh. One other question about the Countess. Do you remember any particularly close friends she may have had in Switzerland? Or did she go there often?
Oh, very often, sir. She was extremely fond of Switzerland.
Oh, well, then that explains it. Countess de Visca left by plane for Switzerland this morning.
I hope she can enjoy it in the style to which she is accustomed.
Oh, that shouldn't be any problem. She took with her £130,000. I wonder where she got it.
Yes. I wonder, sir.
We'll continue with Act 3 of Five Fingers in a few moments. The curtain rises on Act 3 of Five Fingers, starring James Mason as Diello and Pamela Colino as the Countess.
To Diello, the news was unthinkable. Anna Stavisca had stolen his money and gone to Switzerland. He hurried away from the embassy, went to a cafe, and telephoned Moisich.
Listen carefully, Moisich. Tell Colonel von Richter I have decided to get the information about Overlord. I need the money. But I'm being watched. I'll arrange a meeting place in Istanbul. I'll call you there tomorrow at the German consulate.
about it, Travers. After the phone call, Diallo came directly back here to the embassy.
But did you speak to anyone at the bar?
No, no one. I think you're on the wrong track, sniffing after Diallo. After all, he didn't bat an eye when you told him about the Countess.
But why would he go to a cafe to make a telephone call? And then why did he... No, maybe you're right. Where is he now?
Upstairs. If he should leave again, he'll be followed, of course.
Yes, Diallo was upstairs, staring at the ambassador's safe and the newly installed wiring that led out to the hall to an electric alarm bell. In the safe was a secret worth £40,000, but one turn of the dial and the entire British embassy would descend upon him. But then he smiled. How simple it would be. Diallo walked down the hall to a broom closet. In it was a fuse box. He removed the fuse that served the ambassador's study and thus broke the current to the alarm bell. 2 minutes later, he was taking photographs of half a dozen papers containing the word Overlord. And then there was no time to return the documents to the safe, no time for anything but to find out who was at the door.
What do you want?
The porter, sir. I clean office now?
No, not now. His Excellency won't be back until tomorrow.
But it is not necessary...
Not now, I said. Come back later.
But the porter was not one to quickly surrender. If he could not tidy up the study, at least he could vacuum the carpets in the corridor. But when he turned on the vacuum cleaner, there was no electricity. So he went to the broom closet, observed that a fuse was missing, and promptly replaced it.
Come on, where did he go? Did you see him?
What man? Who?
That man! Get away!
Where's Diallo, McFadden?
He's just run off the back stairway. He was chasing someone.
All right, Johnson. You and Kimball follow him. Find him and stick with him. Morrison, get a dispatch off to London. I want all available information on Diallo sent here at once. All right, McFadden, come on. Let's have a look at the safe. Yeah, the papers are all here. Now, what about the letters, that batch of mail that came to the ambassador?
There were five letters. One letter is missing, the one with the delicate perfume.
Yes, one letter gone, but none of the papers. Now, I wonder why... That light in the bedroom.
Lamp's on.
Yes, it's an unusually bright lamp, isn't it? Come here.
Photographic bulb. He's photographed...
All right. Have Burroughs and Murray watch the German embassy. We've got to keep him from delivering that film.
Grab him in public. Our Turkish friends might not like it.
Well, if we can't kidnap him, McFadden, we'll have to kill him. There's a little matter of Overlord we've got to consider. All right, now send out a man to the airport. After Johnson gets back, you and I'll get out to the railroad station. If he doesn't show up at their embassy, you can be sure he's leaving town. At the German embassy, Colonel von Richter was also making plans, based on Diallo's phone call from the cafe to Moisich.
He said he would arrange a meeting in Istanbul? Very well. Siebert, you and Sturben take the train. Moisich and I will go by plane. Cicero is bound to be on one or the other.
Shall we go armed, Colonel?
Naturally. You are to protect Cicero from the British at all costs until we get that film.
And after that?
After that, Moisich, it will be up to Cicero to protect himself from the British and from us.
At the crowded railroad station, four men kept their tense watch for Diallo. Two British and two Nazis. But there was no sign of Diallo. Not until the train started to move from the platform. And then, from his hiding place, Diallo dashed through the crowd and onto the train.
Well, I've gone through the last three cars. There's no sign of him.
He's in the car just ahead, second compartment. The door's closed.
Well...
There's nothing to do between here and Infas to Istanbul, but make sure that none of them get off.
Them?
Yes, down there. The old, familiar faces.
The same two we saw in the station. But what if he's given them the film?
They wouldn't be playing watchdog for him if he did. So, put your gun away, McFadden, and light up your pipe. A long ride to Istanbul. In his compartment, Diallo was reading a letter. The letter with a delicate scent addressed to the British ambassador.
And so, by the time you receive this letter, I shall be far from anger, far from uncertainty and hunger and humiliation. I shall be settled, I hope, in a new life of security and self-respect. You have spoken to me so often, my dear ambassador, of Diallo, the perfect valet. Surely I can offer no greater proof of my devotion to the Allied cause than to inform you that your trusted Diello is a German spy. I know both you and your government.
Early the following morning, Diello left his compartment and entered another.
Good morning, gentlemen. Did you sleep well? I slept extremely well. Guards to the right of me, guards to the left of me. You are my bodyguards, aren't you? Or are you my assassins?
We are here to see that no harm comes to you from the British. We will stay at your side till we reach the German consulate.
Don't be whimsical. I'm here only to give you a message from Moisich. Tell him to meet me at Hakim's restaurant at 6 o'clock this evening.
We would prefer the consulate.
Oh, no, thank you. So many more people go into German consulates than come out.
We must have some guarantee that your film is genuine.
Here is a little strip of film. Have Moisich develop it, and you will see a piece of the document that Colonel von Richter wants to buy. I'll deliver the rest of it when Moisich pays me 100,000 pounds.
100,000?
Oh, I forgot to tell you. I've just raised the price.
At 6 o'clock in Istanbul, in a restaurant called Hakim's, Moisich kept his appointment with Diello. Some moments later, they were followed there by Travers and McFadden.
Good evening, gentlemen. You wish a table?
I'm looking for a friend. He'll be in a private room. That is a private room over there?
It is occupied.
Good, then he's here.
I am sorry. He does not wish to be disturbed.
But he's expecting us.
I am sorry. If you care to wait, please, to be seated here.
Well, he's here, McFadden. And Moisich is in there with him.
There is a time for using your wits and a time for blasting away. Let's get it over with.
We have no monopoly on blasting away in this place.
Oh, our Nazi friends again, eh?
Yes, those dim-witted supermen over there would drop us before we got clear of the table.
But he may be handing over the film this minute.
Well, as of this minute, we don't want the film. Plans can be changed, you know. We want Diello. We've got to know just how much the Nazis have found out. Now, look, I'm going to send him a note, just a word or two, to let him know that we'll protect him.
You're balmy, Travers.
Oh, no, he'll jump at it. You, if you don't mind.
Yes, sir.
My friend may not know that we're waiting for him. Would you give him this note, please?
That note you just got, who is it from? What does it say?
You're troubled, Moisich. Is it because you know that I haven't much longer to live?
The two Gestapo men are here to protect you from the British.
What two men? Really, Moisich, you and your guilty conscience and your big mouth. Well, the money is all in order, and here is the film.
Good.
Has it occurred to you that our roles are now reversed, that the British may try to kill you? Well, Moisich, shall we go?
He's heading toward us, Travers. Your note worked.
Mr. Travers, I'm touched by your solicitude. Imagine me, of all men, with a British sword and a British shield.
Personally, I'd rather slit your throat.
Impractical. In that case, I'd be unable to tell you all the things you want to know. You've no idea how confused the Nazis are to see you protecting me. They still half suspect I've been a British plant all along.
We have a car outside. We'll see you safely to the British consulate.
No, thank you. We'll walk away together and then say goodbye.
I'll get the Turkish police to arrest you.
Is that a gun in your pocket, Mr. McFadden? It's against the law here to carry a weapon, don't you know?
Come along.
Of course. You disapprove of me, don't you, Mr. Travers?
You're the most cold-blooded traitor I've seen in a lifetime of looking at human trash.
What a pity. I rather hoped I looked like a gentleman.
They left the restaurant. Behind them came the two Gestapo men, Siebert and Steuben. But Diello had known exactly what he was doing when he picked Hakim's as a meeting place, for the narrow street was jammed with people and traffic. They walked not more than 50 feet when he suddenly darted away and was lost in the crowd. Meanwhile, Moisich had rushed to the German consulate with a roll of film that had cost 100,000 pounds.
The film is developed, Colonel. I have exactly the information you wanted.
Have you? It took you long enough.
I was so nervous. I spoiled the first print. But here it is, sir. D-Day for Operation Overlord is tentatively set for early June along the coast of Normandy and the Cherbourg Peninsula. Colonel, did you hear me?
Now you hear this. An urgent dispatch from Von Papen.
Von Papen?
Have just received personal letter from Countess Anna Staviska naming Cicero as British agent. Am unable to confirm accusation because Countess is now in Switzerland. But in view of past efforts to ingratiate herself with us, am compelled to believe her charge is true.
I cannot believe it.
I have always believed it from the first.
But the documents were genuine. Events proved them genuine.
Of course, they had to be, so that we would swallow that big lie, that one in your hand. I knew it. All along, I knew it. Lies, lies, lies!
Yes, Diello had won. As Roberto Antonini, he sailed away to Rio. He bought a magnificent home high on a hill overlooking the harbor, and he wore a beautiful white dinner jacket every night. But one evening, as his valet was serving dinner out on the balcony, two gentlemen came to call on him.
This is an unexpected pleasure, Senor Da Costa.
May I present my friend, Senor Santos?
I am honored, Senor. Are you, too, associated with the bank?
No, Senor, with the Brazilian Department of Investigation.
And you have discovered some irregularity in my papers?
Your papers are all perfectly in order.
There is an irregularity, however. Your account at the bank, senor.
Am I overdrawn? As of yesterday, I had approximately 7 million cruzeiros in my account.
I was referring to the £25,000 in cash with which you purchased this villa. The money has been returned.
What on earth for?
It is counterfeit.
You have a distorted sense of humor, senor.
So is the money which was changed for Brazilian currency. It is all counterfeit. The most skillful I have ever seen.
Senor Antonini, I implore you to cooperate. Those counterfeit notes were printed in Germany. The British have just established that beyond a doubt.
And so far they have turned up in 3 places. Here in Brazil, in Turkey, and in Switzerland.
Switzerland?
Over 100,000 counterfeit British pounds were confiscated there 2 days ago.
In the possession of a political refugee, a lady, a countess.
It will be to your interest, senor, to tell us where and how you got this money.
Switzerland.
Now, believe me, senor. Believe me, this is no laughing matter. It is my unhappy duty to inform you are under arrest.
Anna.
I beg your pardon.
Anna. Poor little Anna.
In a moment, our stars will return.
And here they are coming forward for a well-earned call. James Mason and Pamela Colino. Jimmy, you were just great. But we're much happier to know you as you really are. After all, nobody likes a man masquerading as someone else.
Oh, that's not necessarily true. Take Edmund Gwen. People love him, whether he masquerades as Santa Claus or a counterfeiter.
Or even an admiral.
Teddy Gwen, an admiral?
Yes, in 20th Century Fox's picture, Something for the Birds. Teddy co-stars with Vic Mature and Patricia Neal.
And he plays an engraver who forges lovely invitations to parties and then attends as an admiral of the United States Navy.
I know it'll be a comedy hit, Pamela. But I still prefer people who don't masquerade. Like Lux girls. After all, you can't hide a Lux complexion.
Well, who would want to? Particularly when Lux soap is such a wonderful complexion care.
Ah, you're smart as well as beautiful, Pamela. Our audience knows you're a popular novelist as well as an actress. So have you written any new bestsellers?
No, Irving. Since the success of O. Henry's Full House, I think I might try writing short stories just like O. Henry did.
Oh, I'd rather you wouldn't, dear. Remember, O. Henry wrote those stories in prison. Who'd run the house and take care of Portland?
It might be worth it, Jimmy. I once directed an O. Henry story for 20th Century Fox. And it became one of the first full-length talking pictures.
I bet that was in Old Arizona, which was nominated for one of the first Academy Awards.
Yes, there's nothing like a good story and fine actors to make an outstanding picture. And that reminds me of next week's play. It's adapted from a best-selling novel and is the rollicking story of a different reactions of 6 convicts to a newfangled doctor called a psychologist. It's the Stanley Kramer production of My 6 Convicts. And starring it as his original role will be that excellent actor, Millard Mitchell, and as the doctor, one of your very favorite stars, Dana Andrews.
We won't miss it, Irving. Good night.
Good night,
Mr. and Mrs. Mace.
Brand new stockings, worn only a few times, yet suddenly you popped a run, and you never knew why. Has this ever happened to you?
Well, look, you may be wearing out your stockings in the wash. Harsh washings in strong wash day soaps and detergents were never meant for delicate nylons. Cobweb sheer nylons just can't take it.
Delicate nylons need special soap, special care, Lux Flakes care. How nylons thrive on gentle washings in that silky Lux lather. Why, Lux Flakes care doubles stocking wear. It's just like getting an extra pair with every pair you buy. You see, gentle Lux Flakes care can't possibly cause runs, wash stocking life away. Fact is, each gentle washing in pure Lux Flakes has a special action that keeps nylon threads strong as new, washing after washing. Start using Lux Flakes tomorrow. 95% of stocking manufacturers recommend Lux, and it's guaranteed by Lever Brothers Company.
Lever Brothers Company, the makers of Lux Toilet Soap, invite you to be with us again next Monday evening when the Lux Radio Theater presents Dana Andrews and Millard Mitchell in My Six Convicts. This is Irving Cummings saying goodnight to you from Hollywood and urging you as good Americans to vote in November.
Heard in our cast tonight were Michael Pate as the narrator, Ben Wright as Travers, Edgar Barrier as von Richter, Stephen Roberts as Moises, Bill Johnstone as von Papen, Herbert Butterfield as Sir Frederick, Robert Griffith as McFadden, and Robert Boone, Larry Dobkin, and Eddie Marr. Our play was adapted by S.H. Barnett. Our music was directed by Rudy Schrager.
Trust Silver Dust. Trust Silver Dust. Trust Silver Dust to give you more for your money with a goodwill offer that's really a honey. Trust Silver Dust.
New improved Silver Dust Wonder Bubble Suds for laundry and dishes now makes you this amazing goodwill offer. Inside every giant-sized Silver Dust, you get, as an extra, a genuine full-size Cannon dish towel. Lint-free, highly absorbent, gay, colorful border, worth 25 cents or more. Remember, in giant-sized Silver Dust, you get this genuine full-size Cannon dish towel as an extra. Try Silver Dust. See how it safely digs out dirt, gets clothes cleaner, speeds dishwashing, kind to your hands. Yes, Silver Dust, a great washing product with a Cannon dish towel inside, gives you more for your money than any other washing product. That's guaranteed.
Get the giant-sized box of Silver Dust with the big Cannon dish towel as an extra today.
Lever Brothers Company unconditionally guarantees the quality and performance of Lux Toilet Soap, Lux Flakes, Florident Toothpaste, and Silver Dust, or your money refunded. This is your announcer, Ken Carpenter, reminding you to join us again next Monday night to hear My Six Convicts, starring Dana Andrews and Millard Mitchell. This is the CBS Radio Network.
A huge thanks goes out to John Bell, the man of mystery from Bells in the Bat Free, for doing the intro and having a bit of fun with it. Oh, and the music he chose for his intro was from the Tijuana Pit Orchestra from the LA Air Force Collection. And as John said, no, really, that's who did it. So anyway, thanks a million, partner. While Stevie Farnaby and Brian Bocchicchio did the intro music, as always, rock on. This is Bill Holwig from the Swagcast for John Bell. Hope you enjoyed. Have a good evening. Bye.